We left off last week. We were discussing the din that appears in the Mishnah, Maseches Nidah, that if a woman finds a kesem, she finds a stain, which is a very small size, so then that does not have a problem. There is no issue of tumas ksam, there's no issue of labayla, on such a small stain. How much is the shear? So the Mishnah Machlek Zatarang, we pass it, the shear is pachas bika gris. If the shear is less than the size, is about the size of a penny, so that's not considered to be a kesem altogether. Where in the world did this halacha come from? So we gave a somewhat long hagdama to this, and last to shiurim. This is assuming, of course, that this is not a need of midaraisa. The reason why she's not a need of midaraisa is that there's no agosha, there's no sensation, there's no normal flow, whatever the definition of agosha is exactly. The bottom line is it's only a problem with the rabbanan. So the chachamim built in a certain kula into the halachas of ksamim, and one of the kulas is pachas migris. What prompted them to come up with the shiur? So that we said was a big machlekes apelskim. So one could present, based on the simple reading of the Mishnah Maseches Nidah, that this is just a plain and simple talia, that since there's a chance that the blood came from somewhere else, since there were a lot of bugs around the days of Chazal, so it's a possibility, just a small stain is found on our sheet, underwear, etc., so there's a chance that it came from something else, so she can be tola, just as she can be tola if she has a makom, so a woman has the hemorrhoids and she finds a bleeding and a stain in her underwear, so she can assume that it came from the hemorrhoids, so too, if she finds a small stain, even though she doesn't have any makom, she doesn't have anything else to be tola on, she can be tola on the bugs, that's one possibility. What do we say now? That's not really to do with bugs. Then it's true there were bugs around the days of Chazal. That's true. But the real reason is the Chavu Masake, this is a shear. It's a halacha, it's a pi halacha, it's called a shear of a kesem. And anything less than the shear of a gris is not considered to be a kesem at all, not just because of being told that maybe it came from a bug. So we started to speak a little bit last week about some of the nafkaminas ladina. So there are a few other very important nafkaminas la halacha that emanate from this machlagis. So what would the halacha be in the following case? Let's say you have a woman who finds a kesem and she's looking at it, and it's not always so easy to figure out whether it's a gris or not. Some of them don't present themselves in the perfect circle shape, like a penny. So it presents itself in a very, very strange, different way. So you have to try to figure out, is it the size of a penny or not? So usually many rabbanim walk around carrying pennies. With all the pennies in the world, it's still a lot. You have to bend it and fold it, and sometimes you have to even cut it apart. You have to rip it apart and play a puzzle game to try to figure out, does it really equal a penny or not? So it's not so simple. There's a rabbi who gave me a sheet that he put together with about 30 different possible shapes that a kesem could be in, and he made calculations to figure out exactly how much the shear of the area of a penny is in any one of those possible shapes. Of course, the problem is the shots that you get are going to be the 31st one, the one that doesn't, not on that list, but whatever. So again, so it's sometimes not so easy to figure out whether you have a gris of blood or not. So she puts it aside, and she's going to bring it to the Rav. She's going to ask a shayla. What happens in the interim? As very often happens, the kesem gets lost, or more often than that, it gets washed. It gets thrown to the laundry, and then the babysitter washed it, and then she comes home that night looking for the underwear. Now there's no shayla on it. Now it's at the gomer, because there's no blood on it, there's no stain on it anymore. So what do? So you have a suffix, pachas negris or not. So she knows she had a kesem, but she has a suffix, whether it had the shear of a kesem or not. So this is a big machlekes haposkim. What do you do under such circumstances? So many people can say it's mutter. Safik is mutter. Why? Safik derabanan kula. Since the whole hilchos ksamim is only derabanan anyway, so we're not sure what the facts are. So safik derabanan, we have a right to be mekel. So the Badi Ashulchan raises a question about this kula. How could you say such a kula? That safik derabanan kula. We have a rule that safik tliya is lachumra. Let's say you have a situation where a woman finds a kesem. And remember we mentioned last week that if a person lives in a place where there are butcher shops and there are blood splattering all around, so she can assume that the blood came from the butcher shops, it came from the other places, so she would be muteris. So you have a woman who finds a kesem, and she doesn't know, she can't remember, did I go to the butcher, did I not go to the butcher? So the halacha, she can't be told on that. A tliya means that you have to know for a fact, not that you know for a fact the blood came from there, that's not a tliya, that's a vados. But I know that I was in a situation where I could be told that, otherwise it would never. So maybe I walk past the butcher shop. Maybe I have hemorrhoids. Maybe tomorrow. So you have to have something with adults. You have to have a vaday tliya to be told that you're suffering on. That doesn't sound like a lomdisha term, so tell me another one. So that's what the halacha is. You have to have something vaday to be told on in order to be matir kesem. So it comes about the shulchan and says, if pachas igris is just a tliya, so why don't we call that a suffix tliya? And a suffix tliya is not a tliya. It has to be a vaday tliya. You have to have teshua something to be told on. So the chorah, the answer to that question question is obvious based on the yisod that we said last week with the Chassam Sofer, that pachas migris is not a tliya. Pachas migris is a din. Pachas migris is a halach. It's a shir. Kach tiknu chachamim. So it's like any other suffix. So if I have a suffix, I have food in front of me, and I'm not sure, is it bishalakam or is it not bishalakam? So suffix d'rabbanan is the kula. I have a suffix that I light in Erez Chanukah, not suffix d'rabbanan the kula. So I have a kesem in front of me. I don't have it in front of me anymore. I had a kesem in front of me, and I don't know. Did it have a shir, which was a problem? Did it not have a shir, it's a problem. So suffix d'rabbanan the kula. You don't have to be worried about the issue of suffix tliya. That's what the minhag is. I mean, most rabbanim today paskin on this, that if you have a suffix on a kesem, means the woman had some kind of a shiva, it never got looked at properly, and now it got lost, so then we have right to be nekel, suffix d'rabbanan the kula. Based on this question that we're raising about how to understand the din of Pachas Migris, is probably the root behind the Machlekes HaRishonim, a very important Machlekes HaRishonim, the Rambam and all the other Rishonim. The Rambam writes that when do we have a Kula of Pachas Migris? That's only if the Kesem is found on a Beged, if it's found on underwear, or it's found on a sheet, or even it's found on somewhere else. But if it's found on Gufa Isha, if the woman finds a spot on herself, so the Rambam says, then there's no Shia. Then even Pachas Migris is considered to be a problem. What's the lumdus of that? Why should we make such a distinction? So the Rambam is looking at the Kula of Pachas Migris from the statistical point of view. The Rambam said that Pachas Migris is a Taliya. It means we're guessing, we're hoping, we're praying that it probably came from a bug. So the Rambam says you have to be very careful before making that statement. So you have to take case by case. If you find the kesem on underwear, you find kesem on a sheet, you find kesem on something which is a little bit removed from the woman's body, so then there's a good chance, there's a better chance that it came from some external source than it came from the woman herself. Why? If it came from the woman, it probably should have been in her legs. It probably should have been in that area. It probably should have been on her body. So we're trying to assess it. We're trying to make a statistical judgment call. Where is the source of this blood? We don't know. If we had Ruach HaKodesh, so we tell you where the blood came from. We don't know. So we're trying to, our best guess, so an educated guess. So a woman finds a little bit of blood on underwear, but there's nothing on her body. So the odds are it probably came from an external source. It's Pachas Migris. It probably came from a bug. And therefore, we'll give her the green light. We'll say she's Muteris. But if she finds a little bit of blood on her legs, finds a little bit of blood on a gufa, so then it's much more reasonable that it came from her guf itself. So therefore, we're going to be Machmir. So notwithstanding the fact that the kesem is Pachas Migris, we're not going to be Mater. It calls man that it's al gufa isha. This is the Rambam Shita. And most of the Rishonim disagree with this. We pass in Halacha the Kula on the Shaila. You know, the Shach seems to be Machmir. The Minhag is to be Mekel on the Shaila. What's Pshat? Well, the Rambam makes a lot of sense. The Rambam makes a lot of sense if you learn Pshat and Pachas Migris as being a Taliya. If you hold that it's a statistical guess, it's an educated guess where the blood came from, so then the Rambam's distinction makes a lot of sense. But if you hold like we hold, like the Chassam Sofer, like all the other poskim, that it's a Din, it's a Halacha, it's a Shia, Briska Shir, it's a Shir, Pachas Migris is not considered to be a kesem, finished, end of discussion. So then, who cares where the kesem is? I don't care what the kesem is on a body, on an underwear, on a sheet, on the total body, where it is. If it's Pachas Migris, it's Pachas Migris, finished. Pachas Migris is not a kesem, so therefore it's going to be mutzis. That's how we assume halacha, that Pachas Migris is not considered to be a problem. Is there any difference whatsoever, halacha, between a kesem that's found on Gufa Isha in contrast to a kesem that's found on a Begin? We reject the Rambam. Most of the later posts who don't follow the Schumer of the Rambam, is there any reason to make any distinction? Do we care where the kesem shows up? Does it matter whether it's on her underwear or it's on her body? So there is a little bit of a difference. It's not that common Shiloh, but it does come up. I've had the Shiloh once or twice, but I don't think... just about that, about once or twice. But it does, every once in a Yovel it does come up. And that's the following Shaila. The Gemara has a suffix in Maseches Nida about what's called Tipe Tipin. If a woman finds a kesem and there's more than a gris there in total, but it's not in one place. Let's say a woman comes with a pair of underwear. This part is very, very common. This is all the time. A woman comes with a pair of underwear, comes with a sheet or something, and there's a little bit of blood there, but it's not, again, some of them very rarely present themselves in the perfect shape that you like it to be. So there's a little bit of a kesem, and then there's a little bit of a break, and then it's a half an inch further away, there's another little bit of a kesem. And then it's a tenth of an inch away, there's another little kesem. And if you add up all the different kesem altogether, you end up having a gris of blood, but you can't pinpoint. There's no one kesem you can label as being more than a gris. What's the halacha? So that's a suffix in the Gemara, in the end of Masechas Nida. Whether tipe tipe a mitzdarfin or tipe tipe ain a mitzdarfin. So how do we pass in the halacha on that shaila? So the problem is that there seem to be two different Gemaras about this topic. One Gemara seems to leave the hanging that tipe tipe maybe is not mitzdarif, and another Gemara seems to say that it is mitzdarif. So how do you resolve the answer to this question? So Tosis writes, when we pass in Shulchan Aruch, that the answer is as follows. It depends where the kesem is. If the kesem is on a beged, which is a little bit more kal, a little bit further removed from the woman's body, so there's a better chance that it's okay. So tipe tipin, we pasket ein mitzdarfin. That's the din. Whereas if it's al gufa isha, so then tipe tipin are mitzdarfin. That's the din. That's what says the Shulchan Aruch. That's what we pasket. That's strange chiluk. So again, we fundamentally don't accept the Rambam. The Rambam says that Pachas Megris is a problem on Gufa Isha, that we don't accept. But we do accept the higher standard of a Shear, namely, even if it's Mistarif to many, many Tipin, that would pose a problem in terms of if it would be found on Gufa Isha. So that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. So we have to just stop for a moment to just understand, just practically speaking, what those two halachas mean for us. How did this play out Lamaisa? So the much more common Shaila is Tipe Tipin Ala Bege. That happens literally every, rarely does a week go by without some kind of a Shaila of a Tipe Tipin Ala. Again, a woman presents a shayla. She comes with a kesem. It's a kesem of underwear. So there's a little bit of red here, a little bit over there, a little bit over there. If you start adding it all up together, so then it adds up to a gris. But if you don't add it up together, then it's not a gris. So we pass in Shulchan Aruch, it's not mitzdarif. Even though we paskin that it's not mitzdarif, the poskim quote, Kimega quotes the following. What does that mean it's not mitzdarif? That means if it's separate and distinct summon. It means you have a underwear, and you have mamash dot over here. Then you have an inch of nothing, zero, mamash, nothing at all. Then over here, there's a little dot over here, a little bit less than a gris. And then if mamash nothing, half an inch away, a little bit of something else, a little bit of something else. So we're not mechuyev to start doing the math and calculating, adding it up. The halacha views each kesem as a separate and distinct kesem. But what if it's one big kesem? What if it's one big stain? It's clearly the same stain. What do you mean it's clearly the same stain? That there are other colors in between those little dots of blood, that although those other colors happen to be Maras Tahoros, what we call. We haven't even spoken about this yet, but hopefully down the line we'll talk about what's called the Maratama, it's called the Maratohar. Not every color that comes out of the woman's body is necessarily a problem, only if it's in the red family. If it's, let's say, brownish or yellowish or whitish, other kinds of Maros, so those Maros technically are not a problem. So what do you do in the following case? A very, very common shot. The woman comes with a kesem, and there's a little bit of red over here, and a little bit of red over here, a little bit of red over here, but bad luck. There's a big blotch of brown, a big blotch of yellow that's being mitzdarif, that's connecting all the dots, literally connecting all the dots. So what is the halacha? So Rabbi Kivega writes that you can no longer apply the kula of tipe tipin anymore, because this is not separate and distinct stain, this is one big stain. So what do you have to do? So you have to really do the math. You have to add up all the different tipin together, but only the red parts of the tipin, because whatever's brown, whatever's yellow, whatever's the maritor, it doesn't get, that's like nothing, that's like zero. So you have to really, really do the math now. You have to look at this big kesem and not look at it as separate, distinct sum. You look at it as one big package deal, one big kesem, but you only add up those parts which are maritome, which are red in that kesem. So this is when the sum starts to get very complicated. Because now you have to start posketing a few shallows. You have to be certain which is the red and which is not the red. That in of itself is sometimes difficult to make that assessment. And then you have to figure out where exactly the red ends and where the brown starts. You can get very, very, you can get cross-eyed trying to figure out where the red ends and where the brown starts. And then you have to take all those parts of red and try to finagle your way into a penny and try to figure out whether all those parts of red add up to the size, to the area of a penny or not. So sometimes it's easy to do that, and sometimes it's very hard to do that. So I've seen my rabbeim sometimes look at a kesem like that and take out a pair of scissors and cut. And literally cut out the pieces, cut out the red parts, cut out red over here, a little red over here, a little red over here, a little red, because it's all touching. Take out the little piece of red, assuming the woman gave permission to do that, and the gzeil is also a consideration here. And you take a penny, and now you have to put all the pieces into the penny. And you have this part hits Lincoln's head, and this part hits Lincoln's back, and this part hits the Lincoln Memorial, and now you have to figure out that if you can fit in all those pieces into the air of a penny, and the penny is still bigger than all those pieces of red, then the good news news is that the woman is mutaris. If you can't do that, if all those pieces, all the puzzle pieces together do not fit into the area of a penny, so then the woman is asura. So this happens. These shadows really do happen. So again, that's the din. That tipe tipen are not mitzaref, but they are mitzaref if there's anything that's connecting them, even if it's a mara tohor. If there's nothing connecting them at all, so then it's not a problem. That's what Rabbi Rui calls it. The island. Each one is an island before the outcome. Each one is totally surrounded by water. It means each drop is surrounded by clean white underwear all around it, so then it's not a problem. Then you view each one as a separate kesem, and then if each one is less than a gris, so then the woman is going to be muteris. But this kula does not apply al gufa isha. As we said that when you have a kesem al gufa isha, so then we go more lechumra. Then we like that other statement in the Gemara. So it says in Shulchan Aruch like Tosfos that a kesem al gufa isha goes lechumra, and even tipe tipen are going to be mitzdarif. So I had this shayla one time as follows. It was a strange shayla. Somebody called me actually from Eretz Yisrael with this shayla. The first time he lived in Harnof, if I'm not mistaken. So they called me from Harnof. And with the following shayla, the woman found at a bizarre time, she was, you know, nursing pills and migraines. She found, in the middle of nowhere, she found a very, very small kesem. But the small kesem was on her leg. And there's nothing else. Nothing else was found. Just found a very small kesem on her leg. No mat, no nothing else to be told on. And there's... Yeah.
Just when you said leg, does it make a difference where... If you find it on her foot as opposed to closer there?
It has to be in any area that it could have theoretically come from there. There's a Mishnah Maseches Nida that tries to draw out the anatomy to tell you exactly the front of the line, the back of the Lamaisa, our shalas today are usually going to be close to that area. So a woman found a small kesem on al gufa. And the problem was, though, that it was tipe tipe. It was a classic presentation of what Tosfos writes that you very, very rarely get the paskin on. It was tipe tipin al gufa isha. So my initial reaction was, tipe tipin al gufa isha. Wow, this is a once-in-a-lifetime shayla. I said, it's for starters. I said, I asked them all together. If you add up the volume, all those little dots, would it equal more than a gris? He said, yeah, it would equal more than a gris. I said, okay. Sounds like it's going to be awesome, but you know what? I said, I don't have too much experience possibly on Tipe, Tipe, Agu, Faisha. It came out, never, ever happens. I'm just going to call Rabbi Willick and ask him, well, what, is there anything else that I'm missing in this sugya? So I called Rabbi Willick, so he said to me, well, how exactly were they presenting Agu, Faisha? Namely, were they all in the same general area in Agu, Faisha? Or was one in the front of the leg and one in the back of the leg, one in the side of the leg? I said, I don't know. I didn't ask that detail. I said, why is that important? So he said, I'll tell you why it's important. He said, there's a Rashba, not in the regular Rashba. The Rashba wrote two parts of his Svarim Nuchas Nida. He wrote Torah Sabaisa Oruch, and he wrote Torah Sabaisa Kotzar. So all the Rishon quote from the Torah Sabaisa Oruch, Torah Sabaisa Kotzar, got kind of lost the shuffle. It's a little small, tiny sefer, which is printed now on the side of the Torah Sabaisa Oruch. So most people don't even read the Torah Sabaisa Kotzar anymore, except for Rabbi Avadi Yosef read it. So Rabbi Avadi Yosef, in his sefer Torah Sabaisa, discovered that there's a statement in the Torah Sabaisa Kotzer tucked away in the middle of nowhere that says that Bamed Bamamurim, that we asa tipe tipe agufa isha, that women start for together. That's only if it's pretty much in the same area. But if you have one tip over here and one tip over there, it's hard to know where do you draw the line. But it's Rashba writes that if it's nearer, that it's not the same kesem, so it's so far away from one another, so then you can be makel even agufa isha. So Taka doesn't say this in Shulchan Aruch, Shach, the Taz, the Ramon, no one else discovered this, but probably no one else had it. But the Ravadi Yosef discovered this Rashba, and he writes his entire Sabbai. So he really told me this Rashba. So he said, ask her whether it was close enough to each other, or whether there was significant space between the different tipe tipe. So I called the person back, and he said to me, yeah, the one was in the front of the leg, one was in the back of the leg, but I forgot the exact presentation of it. So I said, good. I said, the good news is that it's mutter. I said, now, if you would have wanted to save yourself, that's why I remember that the couple lived in Harnof. If you would have wanted to save yourself a phone call, I said, you could have gone across the street to Rabbi Avadi Yosef, who lives in Harnof, and you could have asked him, because he could have told you that the Torah Sabaisa. So what you did was, you called from Harnof. I think I lived in Paramus at the time. That call went from Harnof to Paramus to Riverdale, back to Paramus, back to Harnof, just to pass it up to Tipe, Tipe, and Al-Gufa, Isha, which were not in the same place. Baruch Hashem, the woman was Muteris. A couple of years later, the husband was listening to the Hilchos Nidashirim online, whatever I told him it was, and he was so excited, he called me and said, this must have been our case that you were talking about. I said, absolutely. I said, I never mentioned any names at all in Hilchos Nida. But he said, absolutely, you're right. Tom said, right, you hit the jackpot, this was your case. Anyway, so he was so excited. Okay. I asked the Rav, an older Rav, not Rav, I asked the older Rav once, I asked him, you know, just practically, I said, when you ever get a shayla, every once in a year, we get a shayla of tipe on kufa isha, and let's say it's a shayla in terms of color, how are you going to look at it? How does practically, what do Rabbanim do to look at a shayla of tipe on kufa isha? He said he has no idea. He said to me, he doesn't know, he's 20 years older than me. He said he has no idea how, nobody says how he's supposed to look at the shayla. If there's a shayla, there's a stuff, I don't know, not sure. Anyway, okay, getting back to the story. So we have a little bit of a background in terms of this first kula, in terms of pachas megagris, what the nature of pachas megagris is, and all the different kulas and chumras and different chilukim, in terms of practically speaking, how to pass in the showers of pachas megagris. Now we move on to the next kula, nuchas ksamim, and that's what the Mishnah tells, mechagis atonim, actually, maseches nida, about the following shayla. Let's say you have a kesem that shows up on a dover she'eno mekabel tuma. Kesem is found on something which itself is not subject to tuma. Is that a problem of ksam or not? So we know most of ksamim do show up on things that are mekabel tuma. Say kesem on gufa isha, a person is mekabel tuma. That would be a problem. Or say an underwear, a baggage is mekabel tuma. So those kinds of things would be problematic of ksam. But there are many other things out there, and we'll talk about them as we go on, about the toilet paper is the most common shayla, and other kinds of things, the toilet bowls, and other potential shayla, and sheets sometimes. Well, we'll talk about the details. What is mekabel tuma? It's not mekabel tuma, but is there such a distinction or not? So it's machlekes Rabbi Nechemia and the Rabbanan. Rabbi Nechemia says, kol kesem shehanim tzadov shen mekabel tuma is not a problem. Just ignore it, finished, end of discussion. That's what Rabbi Nechemia says. So why? Why in the world would anybody say it? It doesn't make any sense. We're not talking about tuma v'tahara. We're talking about whether a woman is muteras l'bala. What do I care where the kesem is found? So comes the Nadiv Yehuda and says, this is a throwback that we spoke about last week. It's the same what the Chassam Sofer said in Hishtikul Torah about Pachas Mikagris, and Nadiv Yehuda was saying in Hishtikul Torah in terms of Davar Sheni Mekabel Tuma. If you remember from last year, Brich Zechama, so we came to the realization that the Nadiv Yehuda and the Chassam Sofer, that we knew that beforehand, they lived at the same time. They lived in different parts of Europe, but we realized that they had the same weather forecast, because if you remember last year, we pointed out that there was apparently a famous Brich Zechama in 17, what year was it? I remember 1780. Due to mass, I don't know, 1780 something, 1790 something, where the Chassam Sofer has a famous tshuva where he writes, he was a younger man, so he was doing Brichas Hachama together with his Rebbe, Rav Nosson Adler, in Frankfurt at the time, wherever they were doing Brichas Hachama at the time, and he writes about how it was raining, and the clouds cleared for a second, and Rav jumped the gun, he said Brichas Hachama, he was excited, that whole story, tells you all stories. And then there's a tshuva in the Nevi Yehuda, also about Brichas Hachama in the rain, or the child that came up, so if you just look at the dates of the tshuvas, it was the same. It was the same Brichas Hachama. So apparently, it was cloudy in Frankfurt, not in Prague. It was, I haven't done the geography that closely to each other, but I imagine it was the same weather forecast. So I guess the Havdo, when it's raining in New York, sometimes it rains in Philadelphia. Also, for those who are interested. Okay. Anyway, getting back to you could say that when lights are off. We'll get back to. So what the Chassam Sofer said last week about Pachas Megris, and Abuda says the same Shikul Torah Legabe Tuma. Says in Abuda, why did the Chama make a Takana and Ksamim? Why don't we leave well enough alone? What was wrong with the Din Der Aisa? The Torah gave us a Gevalik Akul of Hargosha, which is Lobe Hargosha, so then it's not a problem. So why did the Chum come up with this Chumrah of Hilchas Ksamim? So the Rebbe Yehuda and the Chassam Sofer developed this idea that the Chum were very concerned to give a split psak. It means you tell a regular guy, a regular Poshita guy comes to you with a Shaila, and you start to tell him the whole Shtikul Torah that, Lagabe Hilchas Tuma Vitara, so the underwear is Tame because the Dam is an Avatuma. And Lagabe, your wife is Muteris, because Lagabe the Gavra, it's not Matame. A Chefza one way, the Gavra another way. The guy's not a brisk, he never heard of Gavra, never heard of Chefza. Rabbi, is it a Nida or is it not a Nida? So the Rabbi, it depends. It's too complicated. So the Chacham decided that since we have to be Matame, the Dam itself, because the Dam is another Tame, whether it came out Pragosh or not, the Dam is Tame. So the underwear is Tame. There's no shadow, the underwear is Tame. Once we're mitame the underwear, we have to mitame the woman. You can't give a split psak. Had an interesting I should turn this off for a second. So comes the Yehuda and says, since the whole psak of Ksamim is hinging upon the fact that we had to be Nebuch, we were stuck, we had to be Mitame the Beged, so that's if it's found on underwear, which is subject to Tumah. That's if it's found on something else, on the Gufa Isha, which is subject to Tumah. But if it's found on something which is Enim Mekabel Tumah, so it's not Mekabel Tumah, so we don't have to give the split, there's no split sock. So there's no Shiloh on the Chest that the Dam falls on, it's only Shiloh Gabi the woman. So the woman gets the green light, and we tell her that she's Muteris. So that's what Rabbi Nechemia's shita is, and that's the Rabbi Yehuda's razzle dazzle lumbus explain Rabbi Nechemia. Can we paskin like Rabbi Nechemia? So the Gemara seems to say yes. The Gemara in the Anima Sefer Nida quotes that even though others disagree with Rabbi Nechemia, the Gemara seems to say that we follow Rabbi Nechemia. But there's a big but, that there is a Gemara in Masechet Nida that tells us the following strange story. The Gemara tells a story about a woman who was weaving. She was sitting in front of her loom. You know, I remember in Yeshiva once, that maybe you're around those days when that guy that dying from London with the, you know, that fellow with the Mice Oreg fellow? You know, the guy who wrote that sefer. Yeah. So one year he came into YU. I remember many years ago, he came in with his big, he walks into the Beis Medrash with his big loom, and he spots himself there, and he's giving weaving lessons about, I don't know what he was talking about. Anyway, so the Gemara tells a story about how a woman was once weaving, and she was pedaling the loom, I guess, with her legs, and all of a sudden she found blood on the loom, on the ariga, on the clay ariga. So the Gemara has a whole discussion about where did the blood come from. Did it come from Mars, somewhere else? So you see from the Gemara that it was a problem of ksamim. You see that dam is found on this loom is potentially subject to chus ksamim. So come to Rishon and ask, is a loom a kapal tumah? A loom is what we call a pshutei kli eitz. It's made out of wood, and it usually doesn't have a receptacle to it. It's just boards. It's not a bowl. And there's a halacha that only a kli eitz, which has a kabbalah to it, a base kibbutz to it, is subject to tumah. So what is the Gemara pimpling about? Whether this loom, whether the kesem is a kesem, not a kesem, did it come from us? Is there a tli? It's not a tli. Take it later to einam a kapal tumah. Einam a kapal tumah. Isn't that not a problem? So comes the raivin, and that's say for Rabbi Nefesh and says, you see from here that we don't pass like Rabbi Nechemia. Very simple. The fact that the Amoraim were discussing this mud, the crazy shaila of dam found on a loom, even though a loom is not makabel to a loom, Rabbi Nechemia's svar was very nice, but we don't pass like that. So all the other Rishon disagree with the Raivit. All the other Rishon say, no, we do pass like Rabbi Nechemia. So what's the answer to the loom minute riddle? So the Balamar wrote notes to the bottom of the Raivit, Bala Nefesh. Balamar and the Raivit were chavrusas when they were younger, and then they each went their own paths. So they quote one another. Not only do they always argue with one another, Balamar and the Ravid, but they quote each other very often, and every once in a while they'll quote, one will quote the other saying that pshat that you said, that was what I said when we learned together 25 years ago. So he said, and we came to the conclusion that it was wrong, and now you have, so they had a long-standing, interesting, chavrusa turned Balamar Machlokas relationship. Anyway, but so the Balamar wrote but Hasagas on the bottom of the Ravid's Bala Nefesh called the Sela HaMachlokos. He's coming to fight him against whatever the Bala Nefesh said. So the Bala Mor's disagreeing with it. The Bala Mor says, it's not a Raya. He said, Hachamai Eskinim, the loom is Mekabel Tuma. A loom is not Mekabel Tuma. So the Bala Mor says, no, there are different kinds of looms. Some do have a base kibble, some don't have a base kibble. The whole shtickle, I don't know what a loom looks like, except that one guy from England who was walking around the Beis Medrash 25 years ago. So far be it for me to be Machria whether a loom is Mekabel Tuma or not. So the Rishon are finding out who's looms, whether the loom is Mekabel Tuma, not Mekabel Tuma. Comes Tosis and says, forget the loom. Comes Tosis and says, I'll tell you what the real answer to the question is, Tosis. The blood wasn't found on the kli itself. It was found on the strings. It was found on the, what's the word, shasi v'erev? What's the English word? The warps and the, pashas tazria, right? It was found on the warps and the whoops. It was found on the shasi v'erev. And we all know shasi v'erev is makabel tumah. Shasi v'erev is makabel tumah. If I have just the strings that have not yet been woven to a bed, it's makabel tumah. Yes, it's makabel tumah. Negoim. It means a quirk, milchus tumah. Normally, to be makabel tumah, you have to have a beged. Only a beged is makabel tumah. Just a string is not makabel tumah. But shasi v'erev is makabel tumah. Negoim. So it comes to us in the Chiddush and says that even though it's not makabel other tumas, it wouldn't be subject to tumas meisa, tumas maga, tumas zav, tumas sharon. No other tumah. Tumas negoim. Zok toisvus. Anything that's makabel tumah. That's it. Finish. It's makabel ksumim. If you're makabel ksum, tuma, any tuma kuzeh, even a crazy, quirky, once in a million year shayla of tumas negoim, it's going to be makabel ksumim. That's the halacha. That's what Tosfos writes. And that's what we pass in Shulchan Aruch. That's what the pashtus we pass in. That's what most of the post assume, like this Tosfos, that if it's makabel tuma, it's makabel tuma. Finished. End of the discussion. It's not makabel this specific tuma of tumas maganida. That doesn't bother us. So that's what the Nadi Behud is a little bit bothered, because his shtickle Torah was, the only reason why we're mitaher, adav, hashein, makabel tumah, was because we didn't have to mitam, yirav, dam, nidas. So why do I care that it's makabel tumah, negoim? We're not learning negoim now, we're learning masechas nida now. So the Nadi Behud says, I'll hope for him. You're right, in terms of pure lomdus, no pun intended, absolute pure, simple lomdus, so the halacha should be that if it's not makabel tumah, magav, dam, nida, it should be mutter. But it's too complicated for people. You just tell people the formulation in the halacha is, if it's mekabel tumah, it's mekabel tumah. If it's mekabel any tumah, it's mekabel any tumah. Finish, end of discussion. That's the halacha. So if it's mekabel tumah, it's mekabel tumah. Finished. Doesn't matter what kind of tumah it's mekabel. That's what we probably assume the halacha. It's based on this that we find, this is like, I always ask the Bachram when we learn a chasnida, this is the trivia question. If you can get this question right, then it doesn't mean you know a chasnida, it just means you know this particular piece of insignificant trivia. So here's the shaila, here's a trivia question. What is the only difference in a chasnida between Chutz La'aretz and Eretz Yisrael? And even within Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim has the status of Chutz La'aretz. That's the trivia question. What do you say, Yochanan?
And we know that it depends on conjunctive as opposed to not conjunctive.
You're close. You're in the right tumor, but wrong application. So, nigibatim, a woman is standing by the side of a wall, and all of a sudden she walks away from the wall, she finds a kesem on the wall. So, is the wall a davar makabel tumah or not? It's a wall of a house. Is a wall of a house makabel tumah? So, the general rule is it's mechub lekarka. House is not makabel tumah. So, if a woman finds a kesem on a wall and standing in Burgerfield, so she's not going to become tumeah, she's not going to become asura, because it's a kesem on a davar makabel tumah. I'm sorry, a davar she'ena makabel tumah, and she's muteris. But if she's standing in against the wall in Tel Aviv and she finds kesem on that wall, and she has nothing else to be tola on, so then she's asura. Why? Because a house in Tel Aviv is subject to tumas negoyim and asati negatzeras veis eretz chuzaskem. I negibatim never happened. Gemara says lohayev lo yiyah. We haven't been passing too many negoyim in general these days. I highly unlikely that it's ever going to get to negibat. Doesn't matter. The chacham u'mesach and a low plug. If it's makabel tuma, it's makabel tuma. And a house in Tel Aviv is potentially makabel tuma. Going, the offer of the woman is to bear. However, if she would find that same kesem in Yerushalayim, in the real old part, the conditions of Yerushalayim, so the Gemara says in Baba Kama that Yerushalayim on the schalchel of Shvatim, that Yerushalayim was never divided amongst the Shvatim for Klaisol in the normal fashion, and therefore the Torah says, v'nasati nega teras beis eretz achuzaschem, Yerushalayim is not eretz achuzaschem, and therefore it's not subject to tumas negoyim. So if you'd find a kesem on a wall in the Rova, so then the halacha would be like a wall on Bergenfield. So what does Bergenfield and the old city of Yerushalayim have in common that Tel Aviv doesn't happen? Just in case you're interested in that piece of halachic trivia, that's the pashas what the halacha should be. I can tell you that shaila has not yet happened. I've had about as many shailas of ksalim on walls as I've had shailas of nikibatim, and I expect to have about the same. Although the truth is, it would be the same penny that you would use to be mashar both, because the shia for negoyim is a gris, and the shia for ksalim is a gris. Strange coincidences in halacha. Anyway, so this is all the back to normal. So this is the background of the halacha. So the halacha is that a kesem found in a davar shenu makabel tumah, we pass it against the rife, and we pass it as taka mutar. What are some real shilas? What are some practical lamaisic shilas that come up in terms of ksalma and enish makabel tumah? So the Gemara gives us an example. The Gemara gives us a few examples. One example the Gemara gives is if you have a kesem that's found on karka. A woman is sitting on the ground, and she gets up, and she finds a little spot under her. No hargasha, not a deraisa, is that a problem or not? So ground is not makabel tuma, karka, mechubla karka is not makabel tuma. So that wouldn't be a problem. Obviously, bizman hazeh, that's going to be a very, very rare scenario. When you learn Maseches Nida, you come to the quick realization that the women in the old days didn't wear underwear. So someone was showing up all over the place. But as bizman hazeh, women's wearing underwear, she's not going to find a kesem on the ground. If it's going to be a kesem, it's going to be on her underwear. So a kesem, a real pure kesem on the ground is not shaykh bizman hazeh. But comes to Ramon right that just as the ground is not makabel tuma, mechubal karka is not makabel tuma either. So if you have something which is mechubal karka, so that's also not going to be subject to tuma. What's an example? The Ramah says mechubal karka, a beis hakise, says the Ramah. The Moshe beis hakise. If a woman finds a kesem on a toilet bowl seat, if the toilet bowl seat is built into the ground, it's not always that way, but if it's mechubal karka, it's connected, it's cemented into the ground, so then it becomes like part of the structure, part of the house, it's a bias, it's mechubal karka, and therefore it wouldn't be subject to ksamim. So that's what the Ramah paskins, and that's what we paskin today, that if a woman finds a kesem on the bowl itself, on the seat itself, it's all connected to the ground, it's mechubal karka, and even if it's more than a gris, again, assuming it's not pragosha, if it's more than a gris, and you have nothing else to be told on, we know exactly where it came from, it's still mutar, but it's enim kabal tumim finish. That's what the Ramah paskins, that's what today also. So 99.99% of these shailas of ksumim on toilet bowl seats will be mutar, except for the one crazy case, and everyone has their one horror story. So somebody called me with the following shaila. They called me with a shaila with a kesem on the toilet bowl. They didn't have to tell me the whole story. So I was about to say, it's mutar, it's mutar, it's enim mechubal karka. And then in the passing, that's why It's like a doctor. If the doctor has to know which questions to ask, if sometimes you miss one question, it ruins you. So you have to ask the proper questions. So the person's telling me the story, and there was one small piece of information that just came out there in Agav. It happened to be that she was on a plane when the Shiloh happened, and Beis Akisi, the toilet bowl on a plane, happens not to be Mechub L'Karka, because the plane is not Mechub L'Karka. So it's the one in a thousand cases which happened to ask a Shiloh on a Kesem on a toilet bowl is not Mechub L'Karka. So the Psach quickly changed. Say, wait, one second, hold up, not so fast. We're about there anyway, maybe for a different reason. Then in the end, it turned out to be a moot shiloh anyway. She got a period a few hours later. So the whole shiloh, all's well that ends well, in a sense. But that particular nekuda shook me up. I said, you got to be careful. Before you pass it up a shiloh on any mechub l'karka, you have to be very, very careful. So there's a further shiloh. We'll talk about this a little bit later on. It touches on something else. If a woman finds sometimes a kesem, it's a common shiloh. If a woman finds a kesem not on the bowl itself and not on the seat itself, she finds it in the water, in the toilet bowl. So is that considered to be, is that water considered to be makabel tumah or not? So Pashtus says that water is makabel tumah. It's mayim. Mayim is makabel tumah. Food is makabel tumah. So in theory that water is, I mean, you probably wouldn't want to drink it, but it's theoretically drinkable. So that's considered to be mashkin. So mashkin is makabel tumah. No, psachim, sugizim, psachim. No, you know, the first part of psachim, chenitz chanakonim. So mashkin is makabel tumah. So if you find a kesem in the toilet bowl water, chora, that should be a problem. So come some post, give some contemporary post, and give it a gavalik akula. Say, no, it's not makabel tumah. You know why? If you don't like the part about drinking, you may not like this part either. But the Gemara says in the beginning of Maseches Pesachim, in the end of the first parak, that we spoke about this last week. We spoke about this mikvahs. So there are different standards for what constitutes a mikvah. So usually a mikvah has to be 40 saw, but there's a special halacha that sometimes in the Torah, sometimes you can have a mikvah even less than 40 saw for tumas kalim. The whole story, maybe even a revius of mayim, as long as it's in the ground. So a revius of mayim sitting in the ground may be a quasi mikvah for certain aspects of halacha. There's a cloud gold or whatever is a mikvah is by definition not makabel tumah. So water in this cup is makabel tumah. But if you have a puddle of water in the ground, so it may not be makabel tumah. It's a mission at the beginning of Masechet Mikvos. So some poskim and said, what is water in the toilet bowl? Water in the toilet bowl is a, it sounds a little funny, but for certain purposes, it's like a mikvah. It's a puddle of water. It's a collection of water sitting in the ground. So it's mechub l'karka. So it's like water sitting in a hole in the ground. So that may be considered to be, for certain very, very esoteric purposes, quasi mikvah. So that water may not be subject to tumah. Who cares whether it's subject to tumah? Not, we're not passing a tumah tire shilas. Here we are. We're passing a chasnid to shilas. So it's based on this that there are poskim today who are matir. If you have a kesem found in a toilet bowl, so it's mutter because it's like a kesem she'ena makabel tumah. So the Ramah wasn't talking about the water. The Ramah didn't have plumbing in the days of the Ramah. So the days of the Ramah's bathrooms are more outhouses. But today when we have water in the bowl, so not only can we be making on the water on the seat, so not only can we make on the kesem on the seat or on the bowl itself, maybe we can be making even on a kesem in the water, because the water is also in the makabel tumah. So we got a few interesting kulas that may be extensions of this halacha. So these shilas really, really do happen. The kesem on the walls don't happen. The kesem on the ground don't happen. The kesem in the toilet bowl absolutely happen. Kesem in the water absolutely happens. It happens all the time. So according to the Mekilim, we would be able to be makel not only on the bow, makel on the water also. There is another nekuda that's related to this. We'll have to talk about this a little bit later on, about things may get a little bit more complicated, because some of them, which are found in the toilet bowl, in the water, and things like that, are usually associated with when the woman is going to the bathroom. So some which are found right at the time of urinating or immediately after urinating may be more complicated in halacha. There may be issues of hargosha and matkas and other things that go into the equation. So hopefully we'll talk about them when we get a little more into that particular angle of the sugya. But just in terms of enema makabel tumah, we have a few practical examples of enema makabel tumah, karka, mechub l'karka, the bowl, and all the extended kinds of things. Hopefully from next week we'll continue about other kinds of things, enema makabel tumah. Who says this? Just so next week, Neshima, on in 2 weeks, I won't be here.